Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my name's Stuart Miles and welcome to the Pocket Lint podcast. Being able to find your lost Apple gear has always been one of the greatest little features of the Apple ecosystem. While we wait for the much rumored Apple AirTags to launch that will supposedly allow you to track or find an item, Apple has quietly updated the Find My service to allow other manufacturers the chance for users to find their stuff within the app. What does it mean for Apple users and who's taking advantage of it? Pocket Lint's Britta O'Boyle is here to tell us more. Meanwhile, I talked to Graham Jones, an internet psychologist, about how we can look to overcome the stress that we all seem to suffer when it comes to watching something on streaming services. And Pocket Lint's Cam Bunton has been wearing the new OnePlus watch. Is it any good? Well, keep listening to find out. But first, back to you, Britt. Tell us more about what's happened with Apple's Find My app and the new features we're getting.
So they launched an item section within the tab, which is what was rumored to come with AirTags. And within that section, you can now add a third party compatible accessory. Unfortunately, there aren't that many at the moment. There's only
Okay, I was going to say, who's involved in this so far?
Okay, so there's only three at the moment, which is Belkin, some wireless earbuds from Belkin, a VanMoof e-bikes, a couple of those, and Chipolo OneSpot. Which is the only three devices, but I suspect that that will soon expand as they've obviously released the developer kit and everything for it. So
the idea is you buy one of these items, like you go and buy a VanMoof cycle, cycle bike, and then bike, and then it just automatically connects to your phone, like into the service, and then you can track it with the Find My app.
So you have to add it. You have to basically check the manufacturer's instructions. I believe they'll be a little bit different depending on which one. You open the Find My app on your device, and then within the bottom four tabs there's now a section that says items, which sits alongside the devices and people, and then there's a section for you as well, isn't there, in the corner. But the item section is what you'll open, and then you add new item and then follow the on-screen instructions, and then you have to register it to your Apple ID. Once that's done, it will then be registered to your ID, and then you'll be able to track it within the map within the item section. So it won't go into the devices where your Apple devices are, but it will sit in the item section on an app.
Now, we've seen previous companies try and do this before, like most famously Tile, and I think Samsung have got their tile alternative coming out as well. Why do you think Apple are doing it now?
I think it's because they're going to launch AirTags, actually.
And so let's talk about AirTags briefly. What's that going to do?
So they've been rumored for a very long time now, which is why I think they have to be coming soon. And they are basically supposed to be a tile alternative that, again, like Samsung have obviously done, and a couple of others, where you can sort of attach that to your Apple ID, and then you'll be able to attach that to your keys or whatever else you want to track that might not be a specific phone or Apple device, and then you'll be able to use the Find My app to find those things too. So they've been rumored for a while. They're supposed to be circular, apparently.
Right.
But there's lots and lots of rumors about them.
And I suppose the idea is you put them on keys, your bag, your child, dog.
There's
all the above.
Basically, anything that, like, everyday items, I suppose, that you would want to be able to locate if you were to lose them, but not necessarily something that you can already track, such as your phone or your watch, which obviously you can already do through Find My, but it'll be something that doesn't have that you can do. So something like your keys, I suppose that's the most obvious thing that I'd put them on anyway, or my purse, because I typically lose that all the time. So
sure, it's hidden behind the back of the sofa and all the other stuff, isn't it?
Where the kids have grabbed it and taken it.
And so Tile, I mean, Tile's a big, you know, big business already. It's got quite a lot of backing, hasn't it? And I wonder whether people will see this as a viable alternative, or whether you think, you know, I know there seems to be people like that kind of buying into the Apple ecosystem. Do you think that Apple will come up with something that is equivalent to or better than?
I think, yes. I mean, this is Apple, right? So they typically do come up with things that people obviously find interesting enough to buy, even if it's already been done before. So yes, I do think that they'll come up with something that's good enough. I mean, there have been a couple of rumored features, whether they'll come or not, I'm not sure. But one of those is removable battery, waterproofing is one of the other things that's come up in here. So there's like a few things that I think people might be interested in. And also, if you're already in the Apple ecosystem, then having something that just fits, slots into that without having to then download another app and all of that kind of thing, I do think there's something to be said for that, because it keeps it simple.
Still to come, Cam gives us his verdict on the new OnePlus Watch.
I mean, there's nothing to suggest that they can't fix it from a software update, because if you think it's got all the hardware necessary to do all the things that you want it to do, it's just whether they can get those updates out in time, because I'm sure if you've read any of the early reviews from any other publication, they've all been pretty negative towards the OnePlus Watch, and we've had similar experiences. So people are going to be reading those and thinking, well, I should just buy a Fitbit instead, because at least I'll get the basics right.
Have you ever found yourself wanting to watch something on TV only to still be sat there 30 minutes later, still scrolling through row after row of content recommendations, not sure what to watch? Yeah, I know. We've all done it, haven't we? Well, it turns out we're not alone. With the average Brit spending around 18 minutes each day scrolling to find something to watch. And if that's not bad enough, one in five of us spend almost an hour. Yes, an hour to settle on their TV choice, according to a new report from Sky Q. There's even a name for it. It's called decision paralysis. Well, I wanted to find out more, so I recently talked to Graham Jones, an internet psychologist since the late 90s, who's written numerous books over the course of his career on how we use the internet, about why it happens and what we can do to try and stop it. I started asking him what it's actually involved in being an internet psychologist in the first place.
Well, what I look at is the way people use the internet and modern technology, and try and work out how the technology is affecting their behavior, and also how they can adapt their behavior to get the best out of the technology.
Okay, so there's this thing I've been reading about recently, and I know Sky are coming out with it, about search stress. And it, to me, it kind of devises from the old-fashioned, because I'm not young anymore, of going to the video shop in the 80s and standing there for about 45 minutes trying to work out what to watch, and then either walking out with something you've seen before or just not bothering at all because the film that you wanted was already taken out. How does search stress affect us today?
Well, it's causing a lot of stress, actually, and the Sky survey did show that one in four people are ending up in quite a bit of stress that's causing relationship difficulties. So we don't want to be in that kind of stressful situation. And the thing you describe of going into those video stores of years gone by, when you wandered round and round and round and then wandered out and said, okay, well, we won't watch a movie, let's go to the pub instead, kind of thing, because you couldn't choose because of the vast selection that was available to you. And if you imagine that now, the amount of that's available just, you know, makes that video shop look like it had nothing in it.
So how do we go about avoiding it?
Well, one of the problems with the vast selection is the fact that it just bamboozles our brain and makes us kind of freeze. It's called choice paralysis. Okay. And so what we need to do is to make sure that we limit the choice that we're having. So even though you went into that video store years ago, you were actually quite limited. They probably only stocked something like, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 different titles in the store. Whereas now, of course, you've got several tens of millions available. So the more you can limit it, the better it's going to be. So if you walked into a store in the past, you might have said, all I want to do is go to the section that's got drama in it. And then you ignored all the comedy videos and all the documentary videos and so on. And we need to do the same with online technology. So with all the choices that face us on the television, we need to start limiting rather than spending the entire evening just scrolling round and round and round, looking for anything and everything.
And so is that inherent within the interfaces that we use, whether it's on Sky or Netflix, on Disney or Amazon or what have you, that you sometimes think, well, I'm sure they've got to have more titles than this for me to watch, but I can only see like the last 15 or whatever.
Yeah, so there's often the kind of reaction that I get from my friends is I spent ages looking at TV, there's nothing on tonight, which of course is nonsense. Yeah. There is tons on tonight, and it's just a matter of being able to find it. And so it's the approach we take to looking for it that's wrong. And there's no surprise, we haven't had this kind of technology for very long in human existence. And so we haven't really adapted to use it in the best way at the moment. So we're faced with a massive array of choices and we end up being stuck as to what to do because we just think there's nothing for us.
And so is there a way for the listeners that are enjoying this podcast and this chat so far, is there a way for them to avoid, obviously don't turn on the TV, but is there they're thinking about watching something this evening. How do they go about like making it not as stressful as it perhaps could be?
Yeah, not turning on the TV is probably not a good idea because the TV is good for us in one sense, in that it relaxes us. It enables us to escape from the pressures of work and the day. And so it's good that we can relax. So I wouldn't advise not doing anything. Obviously, you can do other things like read a book or whatever, but yeah. I would suggest that you do something to relax. So if watching a movie or watching a TV series is what you want, that's something you should be doing. So what we need to do is limit that choice. So maybe make a decision such as what I want to watch tonight is a comedy, and then only look for comedies. Don't get tempted to look at anything else. Stick to your goal, stick to your target that you've set yourself. And then that limits your choice. And the more you can do anything to limit your choice, the better.
Okay, which is unusual because normally you think, well, I've got access to all of this stuff. Maybe I should need to, not limit the choice. Maybe I need to look at more titles to bamboozle myself with.
Yeah, when you limit your choice, you actually see more options. It's strange. So one experiment of this kind of thing was done in the world of what's known as fast-moving consumer goods, so the kind of stuff you might buy in a supermarket. And when you've got lots of different options for a particular kind of product, whatever it is, tomato ketchup or beer or whatever you're buying, if there's too many options, even from the same brand, we can't see them all. They just seem too many for us. But when the brand limits it to three or four options, we can then see it. And that's about the fact that we can hold a small amount in our brain. So the fact is that if you limit your options, you see more available to you. So the more you can do anything to limit your choices, the more choices you actually perceive you're going to have, when actually what you've done is reduce the amount.
I suppose because you're not, as you say, you're not overwhelmed.
That's it.
By it all. And therefore, you just sort of sit there. When I interview people to work at Pocketland, I always ask them, if you were a product on a supermarket shelf, what would you be and why? And the reason I ask that is because people immediately think of a supermarket. They think of this huge, massive building with loads of products, and then they freeze and they can't make a decision. So it kind of helps you work that through. Okay, so stepping slightly away from choosing what to watch, how do you think this is... the internet is obviously, as a whole, a thing is obviously giving us a huge amount of choice. How do you think that's changed our mental health? Because is that just a case of we're getting this choice and decision paralysis on an even bigger scale?
Having lots of choice doesn't help our mental health because it frustrates us, it annoys us, it leads to anxiety. And so anything we can do, whether it's TV watching or whether it is, using the internet generally, anything we can do to reduce that choice and give ourselves a smaller selection to choose from is a good thing. So often people may be searching for the weather or whatever it is that they're searching for online, and they're faced with 27 million options. And search engines happily tell you how many you could choose from, and people just are faced with not knowing what to select.
And so do you think going, you know, that kind of works why, you know, we only have top 10 choices on that thing again, because it's limiting those things. And maybe, you know, slightly going back to, we're talking about the watching TV as an afterthought here. The more people you have to watch the show with, does that increase the stress as well? Because I suppose you're trying to help everybody then.
You're trying to please all the people all the time, yeah. And you're not always going to do that. And luckily, of course, it's possible that if you live in a household where you've got more than one television screen, because obviously, you know, your mobile phone is a television screen because it can, you know, you can watch programs on that. So people can choose to watch on their own these days. And some people will comment that that's a bad thing because, you know, the family aren't together. But actually, if you think about it, the family together are not doing anything other than watching TV. So what you could do is all watch what you want separately and then get together for family time. So you make it more of an event. And so the family time becomes more valuable as opposed to just sitting and grunting and saying the odd thing whilst you're watching a TV program, which isn't really productive family time.
And how do you think, you know, this will change? We kind of, is the answer just to limit those choices to, you know, help you make the decision? Or do you think there are technologies that are coming along that will kind of turn around and say, actually, this is what you want to watch. Just ignore everything else.
The technology is improving to help us. So already you get recommendations from the different services that you might be using, such as Netflix or Amazon Prime. But you've then got to go to every one of those individually. Mm. So if, for example, you've got a Sky Q remote, you can press the microphone button on it and speak to the remote and say, what should I watch? And it will then bring in all of the recommendations from all those different services into one place. So, you know, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Sky itself, BBC, across the whole range of things. So you've got recommendations based on your personal preferences across all the different range of options that are available to you.
And then do you think we'll get stressed about what the robot overlords, as some people will like to call them, are then suggesting for us to watch? It's like, no, I don't know. Do I want to watch that? I'm not sure.
Well, the thing is, you see, those robot overlords, as you call them, or as artificial intelligence or machine learning, as other people might call it, those are only as good as the information you give them. And so the information that you give them is you choosing things. And so actually they're not very good, or not as good as they could be, when all you do is randomly search through hundreds of different things and watch loads of different things. Whereas if actually what you really want is, you know, your favorite stuff is police dramas, then the more of that you tell the machine, as it were, is what you're interested in, the more it's going to recommend those things to you. So your viewing habits become quite important to the machine. And so if what you're doing is, as the survey showed, you know, several people are just spending more time in an evening scrolling around than they are actually watching anything. So the machine isn't able to learn as much as it could do from you as if you made that selection in advance and said, you know, I'm interested in police dramas, British comedy and American cartoons kind of thing. And then you will always get recommendations based on your personal preferences.
So how do you feel about the sort of rise of these kind of watch party apps that then allow you to, because, you know, you're talking about limiting, you've obviously got lots of people struggle with, if you've got a variety of different kids' ages in your house, of trying to find something for everybody to watch. And then a lot of companies, like from Netflix and from Disney and stuff, are then saying, hey, guess what? You can create a watch party and watch it with loads of other households at the same time, which kind of creates an event sort of evening, but at the same time, you know, you've then got to negotiate with those other households what to choose.
What they're really doing is turning it into a social event. So if you think about going to the cinema, many people go to the cinema with groups of other people. So you go out for the cinema, you may have a meal before or after the movie, and you make it an event and you talk about the movie you've just watched. And you're probably all talking about it before you go into the cinema looking forward to it. So we love social events. So if we can turn TV watching or movie watching at home into a social event, then that enhances the experience for us and helps reduce the stress. So, those kind of things are really helpful.
After years of rumours, stop and start plans and official teases, OnePlus has finally announced its first smartwatch. Unsurprisingly, it's called the OnePlus Watch. The fact that it's an all-round screen device has surprised no one, but perhaps came as an unexpected is the fact that OnePlus opted not to use Google's Wear OS platform. Now, our very own Cam Bunton has been wearing the watch for the last week or so and is here to tell us how he's getting on. Cam, what's the verdict?
The nice way to put it is not amazing.
Let's put it not a nice way then.
It's been pretty bad, to be honest.
Why?
There's a few reasons. I think it's they've taken a similar approach to Huawei with what Huawei Watch did was to sort of strip out some of the nice, pretty functions that you get on maybe an Apple Watch and a Wear OS watch. And so that means you don't get nice interactive notifications. You don't get payments or third-party apps or support for third-party music services. So in terms of like smart features, it's pretty basic in its offering. So the idea is to make it basically a fitness tracker, which is what Huawei has done really well. They've made a watch that looks like a watch, but is mostly just a really good fitness tracker. But OnePlus has essentially failed to make a smart watch, but also failed to make a reliable fitness tracker. So it's just generally not great.
So it's tried to do one thing, didn't do that, but in doing that, it's kind of cut its opportunities offer elsewhere because it didn't even think about things like payments and music and all the stuff that you kind of expect from a smartwatch to have today.
Basically, yes. I think and the idea with cutting a lot of those features out was to extend the battery life, which is why they didn't go with Wear OS, because Wear OS watches and Apple watches, as I'm sure you know, last maybe a couple of days at most if you're lucky. This watch and similarly the Huawei watches will last roughly 2 weeks between charges. So it's got the battery life going for it.
Now, surely if you've taken all the features out and it doesn't necessarily work, this thing's like £50. It's really cheap and they'll just go that route.
Yeah, I mean, it's not expensive. It's about 150, which is similar to what Huawei does again. But it was one of those things where you think if they're going to strip out all those smart features, they at least need to make the fitness and the activity tracking reliable and worthwhile. But they haven't done that.
And so what's happening there? Why is that? What did you find that meant that it hadn't worked on that side of things?
So on that side of things, there were elements like the GPS being really slow to lock onto a signal or just being generally unreliable when you're out doing a run or a walk. So comparing it to, like, I've got a Garmin fitness tracker, for instance, that I take on my runs every week. I did a 10K and the OnePlus watch measured about 7.3 kilometers of it.
Oof, that's quite harsh.
It is pretty harsh. And then yesterday, took it out with the Huawei watch on the other wrist, went for about 3 kilometer walk, and it measured nearly 2 kilometers of that walk. So it just seems to not track that distance. And even with basic stuff like step counting, it just seems to be a little bit off. So you'll get to the end of a day. It got to the point where I was being really quite finicky about measuring it. So I was counting 100 steps, looking at my watch, and it would measure maybe 90 of those. So by the time you add all your steps up, by the end of the day, you're going for 10,000 steps. You have to do 11,000 to hit your 10,000 step goal. So it's just
as someone that's worn a smartwatch or a fitness band for about the last 10 years, or not that long probably, but I was used to wear the Nike Fuel Band and Pebble and stuff. You know that if you're being shortchanged, then you know, that's even more star jumps that you have to do at midnight to get your rings or to get, you know, to hit the targets or whatever.
Well, exactly. And that, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? It's like those few steps per 100 don't sound like a lot, but once you add it up over the day, it does become quite a few additional steps. It hasn't been reliable enough to recommend, really.
Now, OnePlus are famous on their phones for sending out a phone and then very quickly doing a number of updates in an attempt to try and fix some of the problems. We've seen it with their cameras, haven't we? We've seen it with a number of bits of software. Do you think that this is salvageable from a software update perspective?
I mean, there's nothing to suggest that they can't fix it from a software update, because if you think it's got all the hardware necessary to do all the things that you want it to do, It's just whether they can get those updates out in time, because I'm sure if you've read any of the early reviews from any other publication, they've all been pretty negative towards the OnePlus Watch, and we've had similar experiences. So people are going to be reading those and thinking, well, I should just buy a Fitbit instead, because at least I'll get the basics right.
And I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? This is a watch that's entering the market a good 5 years after everybody else. And it feels, from what you're explaining to me, that it's their first iteration, which is understandable because it's their first watch. But in a market today that's so competitive and so aggressive in sort of what watches offer and what they can do, you can't afford to be 5 years behind unless you've got something else that's really exciting.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny. It's like it's almost like going back to those times, like you say, with the fuel band, like 7, 8, 9 years ago when the first ones came out, and you experienced some of the sort of low quality GPS signal and the slightly inaccurate step counting. But you don't expect it from a watch in 2021 when this technology has been around for such a long time and other companies are already doing it well. And in Huawei's case, doing it at a similar price or even less. So
yeah, I remember the TomTom Nike watch where TomTom said, oh, we'll put GPS in because we know what GPS is. And then you'd stand in the run, you'd be like, I want to get going. And like 10 minutes later, it's like, I still want to get going. Oh, I'll just run. It doesn't matter. You just don't want that, do you?
No, and it's exactly that kind of experience where, although even with the runs, when you do the GPS or the walk, it'll tell you it's ready and then you'll go on the walk and then it will still lose signal when you're actually on that run. So, it's not been brilliant. Although, sleep tracking is okay. Heart rate monitoring is fine. But the basics, the other stuff, just it's not hitting the mark really.
And so I suppose the most valuable thing we can tell listeners right now is if they were hoping and pinning their hopes that this was going to be an amazing device and was looking forward to getting one, what should they get instead?
So there are two options. I think if you want to go the classic sort of fitness tracker route, I would say go with a Fitbit. If you want similar features in something that looks like a watch, I would say get the Huawei Watch GT2e, which started off at the same price as this, but I think can be found now for about £100. So it'll do all the things that this does, but better and at the moment cheaper.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Until next time, pip pip.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.